everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Retro Raw Rundown. Why can I not say that? Hi, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined, as always, by Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing all right. I had a good night last night. I went and saw Newsies, which one of my friends played Meta, the Metalark in Newsies, so I had a really good time out doing that. And then I stayed up way too late, and now I'm exhausted and need to pack to leave for Colorado and, like, a very short amount of time, but that's okay. And I'm here and we're talking Retro Raw, and it was crazy.
Yep. It's funny because so earlier today, Finn and I recorded the main podcast, and I can honestly say that I've never heard Finn Martin be so down on the WWE product as he was today. You know, and with good reason. And it's funny, like, we watch these old shows back, and as problematic as some of the stuff is, there's just an atmosphere. You know, the crowd are really into what's going on. And we were talking about the idea of, like, you know how, like, because Finn has said before that he just thinks, like, a four-week rebuild period would do it in 2019. Mm-hmm. I disagree. I actually think that it takes a lot more, because something that they do well on Retro Raw and in other periods, and even in NXT now, is, well, in some ways, is, like, everybody matters. You know, everybody's over to an extent. People know who everybody is, and they like them or whatever. Whereas on the shows now, you know, you've got Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, who are just punching bags for everybody. So they don't really mean much anymore. You've got, a lot of baby faces who don't mean as much as they used to. And, you know, it's not that hard. Just put people in program. And then somebody, Kyle, one of our listeners, asked a question that we were going to answer in the main podcast, but we didn't get a chance to. So Finn and I answered it. And I was going to ask it to you. You can't count NXT.
Okay.
You have to count main roster, or just, like, a big promote. WWE, main roster. When was the last time that you think there was a successful, really good world title run for a babyface?
I have trouble remembering world title runs, which is part of the problem. I mean, I would say Becky Lynch is fairly successful, right?
But then I guess, because the problem is, it's like, is the run really good?
Yeah, so I don't know.
So, I mean,
there have been good, like, title wins, but title runs for babyfaces don't tend to go super, super well. I think because they put so much effort into the journey of getting to the title, and then they don't know what to do when you get there. Because, like, I've seen successful babyface title runs, you know, like, in other companies, and in NXT, I've seen successful babyface title runs. On the main roster, I'm trying to think, like, who's even been champion? Well, I mean, like, AJ Styles, I would say, was fairly successful. It was boring as shit for a while, but it was successful.
Well, because it's funny, because Finn had initially tried to say Daniel Bryan 2014, then he was like,
oh, no, that title run was terrible.
But then, yeah, so you had to take it back. And who Kyle suggested, and I could nitpick it, but CM Punk in, like, 2011, 2012 was probably the last one that was, like, treated like a star, even though he wasn't the top guy. Like, he was still a world champion, and he still had, like, successful defenses, and he felt like a big star at the time. But it's hard. I can't really think of anyone in the last, you know, even the, because the thing is, you can't really count Ronda, because she kind of, you know, she wasn't babyface for that long. She was then kind of in between. So anyway,
I would almost count Ronda, and I would say parts of AJ Styles' reign were successful. It just went on forever.
I mean, not that many title reigns should want to make me bash my head against the wall.
True.
Anyway, so we're here to talk about the June 21st, 1999 episode of Monday Night Raw. If you're following along with us in the network, it's episode 317, I think. Next week we'll be covering King of the Ring 1999, and we will be joined by Finn Martin for that one, so that'll be fun.
Yay, I'm excited.
So before we talk about the episode, as we always do, we have to take a look at what happened on Heat the night before. It was a slower paced Heat than usual, but they told a decent story. The story of the show was basically the 8 participants in the King of the Ring tournament in two four-way elimination matches, and the two winners went on to face each other at the end of the night. We had a promo with JR with Triple H and Chyna at the beginning of the show. It was pretty good because it was all about Chyna being the Queen of the Ring, and kind of Triple H was putting his, you know, path out there. If he wants to be the World Wrestling Federation champion, that's what he's after. You know, because the thing is, back then, they would set up these multiple things. for like champions and challengers and stuff. And what was quite cool about it was the show had a lot of like Triple H being in the corner of China. That was kind of the show. And he was helping her win matches, which is a different dynamic to what we're used to, which is China helping Triple H win matches.
I kind of like the subversion of the roles there. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, China.
It's more interesting than anything else involving Triple H.
China did do an awful line where she said that she'll be the queen of the ring and the DOGG will feel a lot of PAIN.
Oh, China. Bless China.
Anyway, so the Orton promo was pretty good, actually. Set out a good kind of mission statement from the two of them. Then we got Mr. Ass, Ken Shamrock, Big Show, and Kane in a four-way. In the end, it came down to Mr. Ass and Shamrock, and Ken Shamrock got so angry that he attacked the referee, so Billy Gunn got, like, a DQ win, and then got beat up afterwards. The Billy Gunn push, ladies and gentlemen. Undertaker came out, he did a promo, and it kind of struck me, actually, about Undertaker, because as someone who was a fan of Undertaker at the time and all that kind of stuff, he's starting to feel quite irrelevant on the show, because he's not quite the character he used to be. And now that you're in the Attitude Era, it kind of has to be a bit more realistic. So he's trying to introduce elements of, like, you know, we saw it last week or the week before when he was kind of talking realistically in promos, but still dressed as the dead guy. And he's in a ministry. It's all very weird. But he tries to put over there's no dissension, but threatens Triple H. D'Lo and Mark Henry say they aren't taking any shit from Viscera or Midian. So Mark Henry's going to face Viscera in a gorilla press match. We then got a fatal four-way match with Road Dogg, China, X-Pac,
and Hart. A gorilla press match?
Not what it turned out to be. Road Dogg, China, X-Pac, and Hardcore Holly had a four-way. And in the end, Triple H ended up Triple H pulled the ref out. So China knocked Road Dogg out with a chair shot. And then Holly fell on top of Road Dogg to eliminate him. And then China pinned Holly. So it got to the main event, which was Mr. Ass versus China. And within a minute and a half, China distracted the referee. So Triple H pulled Billy Gunn out of the ring, pedigreed him, put him back in the ring, and China won. So China was the victor at the end of the night with some momentum going into King of the Ring. So that was kind of the story of Heat. And China is probably, out of all eight of them, the least legitimate wrestler of the eight, so she kind of needed something. So it was a pretty good show to kind of showcase her, and you can listen to Finn and I on Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes talk about that full show.
How did they do, like, because China is not very good in the ring. I think we've established that already. Like, how did they do on this show kind of hiding her weaknesses and stuff? Did she look okay?
Yeah, they still hit it pretty well.
Okay.
It's only really later in the year where she is forced to have singles matches on a weekly basis that it starts to really, you know,
become more apparent.
Yeah. So we open this Raw with Triple H and China coming out. Triple H and China are both in gear. Triple H doesn't waste time in doing a promo. He just basically says he wants Undertaker right now. Asks Taker to get his dead ass out here. Fans go mental. The Undertaker comes out as Undertaker. I quite like the visual of the Undertaker doing his mad, you know, lifting the lights thing, but Vince going, no, no. And then Vince running out with the ministry. The corporate ministry to try and keep them apart. Vince is kind of taunting the fans, saying, oh, you guys would love this. You'd love to see them face each other, and polls the crowd. They all want to see Undertaker and Triple H kick the shit out of each other. He says that King of the Ring, Rock will be crushed into the oblivion. The McMahons will beat Austin. And the stipulation is going to be that... so then Austin comes out, and Austin says that he is going to... the stipulation that Austin wants for the match is that if the corporate ministry get involved, he wins. But Vince wants it to be that it's no holds barred and anything goes. There is a great line where Vince says, I still haven't got that stench out of my office yet. which the crowd popped for. And then as Austin...
But why is it Vince's office? Shouldn't it be Stone Cold's office?
Well, I assume he doesn't want that office. He wants his own.
Oh, okay.
I did, and Austin at one point has a funny line where he said, I was at the office drink in a meeting... And just, like, changes it to as if he was actually being productive. Austin then, from the top of the ramp, sitting on a ladder, looking badass, throws a beer from the top of the ramp, and it basically hits the ring. And as that's hitting the ring, we hear the music of Shawn Michaels. He comes out through the Gangrel podium in shorts and a t-shirt. Huge pop for Shawn. Shawn then says, you know, he's quite thirsty, and he wants some coffee. And he calls it Patterson and Briscoe, who come out looking smug as fuck, that they are now associates of the Heartbreak Kid. And then Sean decides that tonight there'll be a match between Stone Cold and a member of the Ministry, and whoever wins that match, that's who gets the stipulation. Vince wants it to be Undertaker. Sean says he's already booked. He wants it to be Triple H. Says he's already booked. And tonight he says the Undertaker's defend the title against Triple H. Vince then chooses the Boss Man. Austin gives Sean and the associates a beer, and then Sean says one more match. Patterson and Briscoe want a match with the McMahons tonight, and he's going to give it to them. And then in the greatest segment in Raw history, Patterson and Briscoe dance to Shawn Michaels' music as they start to look like doing a striptease. So then, as that's all going on, the McMahons are in the ring with Viscera behind them, and Shamrock comes in and smashes Viscera with a chair as Vince and Shane flee to the back. A lot going on there, but that's that's the segment. What did you think, Sandra? Talk me through your thoughts.
I mean, there is a lot. There's a lot going on in this opening segment, right? Like, I wasn't super thrilled with it opening with Triple H and Shayna, but it did kind of pick up. Like, Vince McMahon coming out and just being like, there's not going to be dissension in the corporate ministry. We're not going to have Undertaker versus Triple H. That's just not going to happen. It's not going to be a thing. I'm keeping the corporate ministry together. You can already see cracks in the corporate ministry here, right? Like, you can tell that there's a problem, and Vince McMahon is desperately trying to use his greater powerness to keep the corporate ministry together. But then Stone Cold Steve Austin coming out and being like, hey, I'm see-. Like, that's the thing, is that I don't understand the balance of power still. I guess, like, Shane and Vince have just, because they're together, they own 50%, and Stone Cold, because he got Linda and Stephanie's shares, then he owns 50%, so they're kind of at odds with one another.
And then that's where Shawn Michaels comes in to be the deciding factor.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, that's what I asked last week. I said, where is Shawn Michaels? Because why does Vince McMahon get the authority to make all of these stipulations? Why does, you know, like, how can Stone Cold not make matches? Why is Vince making all the matches still? Where is Shawn Michaels to commission? Because his job is to be the commissioner. So I was happy to see Shawn Michaels come back as the commissioner. I mean, he looks like the smuggest prick in the entire world in his shorts and t-shirt, and just kind of looking like he just wants to dance and be the star of the show. But I was happy that he was there to commission. One of the things I don't understand about this opening segment, though, is that, like, the ladder match at King of the Ring, right? Like, it's a ladder match. And so they're adding another stipulation onto a ladder match, and that's the whole hook of the show. And for me, that just seems like overkill. Like, because I've talked about this on Retro Raw before, I think that sometimes they're adding too many stipulations onto one particular type of match. Like, it just seems like putting a hat on a hat, right? Like, it's already a ladder match. Why are you adding either no holds barred or corporate ministry can't get involved? That just seems like extra shenanigans. That,
well, I think the idea the reason it worked for me, I guess, is that, like, you know, it's a way to give another show that there's a stake on this show. So watching this show, because obviously Austin would not want the corporate ministry to get involved, so if he's going to try and use his power to not make that happen, and then Vince obviously wants to be no holds barred so anybody can interfere, then you're at a stalemate, then Michaels comes in. It kind of all, to me, made sense. But I think the thing in the Attitude Era is that if you really like overbooked stuff, it's great. If you don't, it could drive you crazy. I love that kind of stuff, because it means there's always something going on. But if it's not...
See, I sometimes like it, but sometimes it just seems like overkill. And I think it's fine right now. Like, I think it works okay. And I was invested in Austin, you know, winning and coming out triumphant and that kind of stuff. But it still was like, okay, why are we adding another stipulation to a ladder match? Was just kind of one of my things. But
Is there anything to the idea of, by them having that stipulation in there, you're left wondering, well, is there any way they could win? Because they can't have any of their guys involved.
I mean, I guess, but it's still 2-on-1, right? So it still seems like there could be some shenanigans.
I feel like Vince McMahon makes a handicap match for his team.
Yeah, basically. Like, I mean, but in a ladder match, I think it's a little bit different. Like, it'd be different if he could get pinned or submitted, because then, you know, Vince McMahon should easily be pinned or submitted. But because it's a ladder match, and because Shane is adept at, you know, climbing things, I feel like it's a little bit more even. Because, like, say Austin's distracted by Vince and Shane could climb a ladder or something. Like, I don't know how things play out at King of the Ring. I'm pretty sure I know who wins, but, like, I don't know how it goes down. So, yeah, like, it's fine. It's just kind of a... like, okay, you're just adding, like, thing on top of thing on top of thing on top of thing, and it's all just a little bit too much for me. But I did kind of, like, it did make me laugh a little bit when they were like, oh, when Sean's, what was it? They were trying to choose an opponent for Austin later this night, and they're like, well, obviously it's going to be The Undertaker because he's the champion. And Shawn's like, nope, Undertaker's already booked. And it seemed very predictable where it was going, because obviously Shawn Michaels was going to make Undertaker versus Triple H the match, because of course he would, because that's what the corporate ministry doesn't want. And Shawn Michaels is at odds with the corporate ministry. So he wants to see dissension, probably especially because it involves Triple H, who kicked him out of DX and all this stuff. Like, he has history with him. So a lot of the character motivations there make sense to me. And so him booking Undertaker versus Triple H, I mean, not exactly a match I was excited to see, but character motivation wise, it made sense that he was like, I'm going to fuck with you. So they had to go with their third choice, the Big Boss Man, to face Stone Cold Steve Austin for the stipulation supremacy or whatever, you know? So, I mean, it was a hook for the show, and it was a through line, and it was a thread. It just seemed like more shenanigans than we needed. I loved Patterson and Briscoe coming out, though. I absolutely loved them. And I love that the coffee became, you know, the coffee trope continues, which is my favorite thing. It's weird to me because, like, I was watching this and I'm like, why does the coffee trope work so well in 1999 and I can't stand it in 2019? And I think, like, in 1999, it seems like a funny joke that just kind of, like, came organically. And with Alexa Bliss always being like, get me my coffee, get me my coffee, it just seems like they just, like, gave that to her. And that doesn't seem like anything that she would normally do. It just seems out of nowhere, and it doesn't really seem in character for her. So I don't know, something about Patterson and Briscoe being like the eternal coffee people, I think because it was so subtle a lot of the time, right? And it wasn't just like hammering you over the head with the coffee situation. It just works better for me with Patterson and Briscoe than it does with Alexa Bliss, which is weird to compare coffee storylines 20 years apart. But yeah, I love Patterson and Briscoe coming out, being on side with Shawn Michaels. I love the fact that they're going to be involved in the show. I love the Stooges like crazy. Stone Cold Steve Austin was pretty great here. Like, even though, like, Austin McMahon isn't really my favorite thing in the world, and I wish I liked it more, but I do want Stone Cold Steve Austin to come out triumphant. I do want him to win, and this was fine. It went on a little bit long for me, but it was fine. And there was a lot going on. I'm happy that Shawn Michaels is back to commission, because then it seems like the balance of things is a little more in check. Him making himself the special guest referee for later on in the evening is just kind of like, okay, fine. Like, I'm a little tired of the special guest referee trope, but whatever.
Well, you know, he loves to get his short shorts on.
He really does.
Then we got Jeff Jarrett backstage. He's complaining to Shawn Michaels because he's not ready to wrestle. He wants to know who he's facing. And Shawn says he's the commissioner and he's wrestling. So then Midian goes up to Shane McMahon and said, I saw you had a belt. Like, you know, I've lost mine. Can I borrow it? And Shane's like, what? Fine, do what you want. I don't care. Then Shane,
bless Midian. Bless Midian.
Shane brags to Vince about booking Shamrock against Test, you know, former union pals, Test the suffragette, and Ken Shamrock the psychopath.
Why am I on the psychopath side?
I don't know. I think you secretly want Ken Shamrock to throw you about.
Well, maybe.
Then, as the match is about to start, we get Jeff Jarrett coming out with Patterson Briscoe forcing him. Patterson wants to speak to the ref. He says it's now a triple threat match for the Continental Championship, and this is an order from Shawn Michael.
Bless Pat Patterson and JR's his pronunciations. Like, JR Shawn Michael forward on commentary.
Yeah. Anyway, so we end up getting this kind of impromptu match with Jarrett kind of having to wrestle in street clothes. Match is actually pretty decent. There's one point where Test is up, getting the heat, and he's clotheslining Jeff Jarrett to the floor. Here comes Steve Blackman.
He clotheslined Jeff Jarrett to the floor. It took them a while to get Jeff Jarrett to the floor, like to go over the ropes. It was the most awkward going over the rope spot I have seen maybe ever.
Jeff Jarrett was in street clothes, Sandra. He's trying to acclimatize. What was the last thing that happened when you stepped in a ring? Injured for a week.
The last time I stepped in a ring, I was fine, because I was maybe in the ring in Metropolis as well, and that was fine.
So the second last time you were in the ring?
The second last time I was in a ring, I did fall and got hurt. But, and that was when I didn't even bump or anything like that. I blame the ladder. The ladder was faulty.
Anyway. I feel we should just play the don't try this at home ad now. I've broken bones, I've separated shoulders. So anyway, Steve Blackman comes in to ruin our life. He whacks Shamrock with the kendo stick over and over again, lays him out. Tess gets hit at the post, and Jarrett runs in and pins Shamrock. So Jeff Jarrett gets the win here. The medics are trying to give Shamrock some help. He does not want help at all. Blackman leaves the arena. So Steve Blackman is back to feud with Ken Shamrock, and I'm not happy about it, Sandra.
I am not unhappy about it because Ken or because Steve Blackman just amuses me. Like
Here
when
is my
Steve.
levels. Number one choice to feud with Ken Shamrock, Vince McMahon. Number two choice, Jeff Jarrett. Number three choice to number 100, everybody else, 101, Steve Blackman.
Like would you pick Viscera over Steve Blackman?
Oh yeah, because you can imagine, like, I would love to see Ken Shamrock give a belly-to-belly suplex to Viscera. Can you imagine the jiggle?
Actually, that could be pretty incredible. He would bounce. I think that would be pretty impressive, actually. But no, Steve Blackman is just, he's an enigma, right? Like he comes out with his kendo stick and he looks as bored as humanly possible. He looks like he doesn't know where he is or why he's there. And he just sort of like wanders down to the ring with his kendo stick, just kind of like staring blankly ahead, like he's some sort of like automaton or something like that. And then he gets in the ring and then he decides to, you know, beat the shit out of Ken Shamrock with the kendo stick. But even then, he manages to have kind of a bored expression on his face. Like, do you think that Big Show and Steve Blackman went to the same school of expression?
I mean, it's very possible. I think Big Show looks marginally more interested in what he's doing than Steve Black. Maybe like
I think
3%.
maybe like 3% more interested. But I mean, just the fact that Steve Blackman cannot move his face, like Steve Blackman and Sable are very similar in that way, it makes me laugh. And I don't mind Steve Blackman matches either. Like, I think they're actually okay. So I don't mind Steve Blackman versus Ken Shamrock, and I just kind of want to see like angry, crazy Ken Shamrock just beat the shit out of Steve Blackman. So I don't mind this nearly as much as you do because I think you just have a lot more hatred towards Steve Blackman than I do. But the match itself, I mean, other than Test, was pretty decent.
So harsh. He's trying, Sondra.
He's trying, bless him. Sorry, Kyle, I'm just not on Test's side yet.
So then we have The Rock. The Rock comes out, keeps his intro pretty short and sweet, and then we get this kind of cool match, which I think we saw last year actually. The Rock versus Edge. And it's, I think we got it last year, but it's more impactful now because Rock is pretty much a headline guy. Edge has developed a little bit within the Brood, so I really enjoyed seeing these guys have a match, and even though, you know, The Rock finishes him off with the Rock Bottom and the elbow, I think this is another example of when The Rock was had matches with people. I think he put people over in the ring with him because like it felt like a competitive match.
It did feel competitive. I mean, it was obviously The Rock was obviously elevated above Edge, right? And he should be. He's, you know, a former two-time WWF champion, and Edge is on his way up. He hasn't really done much yet. He's just been like that guy in the Brood. But Edge did come out to his own music this time too, which I noticed. He didn't come out to the Brood music. The Brood wasn't with him. He was just Edge. It was the, you know, you think you know me. You think you know me. And so that kind of indicates like they see something in him potentially, or it was just a, you know, whatever decision. But the fact that he came out there as his own person, as his own character, and had a, you know, somewhat competitive match with The Rock was great for me because I want to see the ascent of Edge so badly. And I mean, I think you're right. I think The Rock did do plenty for Edge in this match, even though he won. I think Edge looked pretty good, and I liked seeing this match. I really enjoyed it.
It's one of those things that, I mean, I think that one of the I do want to very quickly. I said something yesterday in the Inside the Ropes podcast. I'm going to kind of take back, and I said that I think Cena helped make AJ Styles a top guy, but I think he undid all that good in early 2017 with the Rumble and Elimination Chamber. So I'll give him partial credit for it. But what I think Cena did throughout his career pretty badly was he. I don't think he really put people over in his matches, realistically. I think that whenever he did put something over, it was so over the top that it almost took you away from it, you know?
Well, I mean, remember like the cage match with the Wyatt family, right? When they had like all of the spooky things, and Cena took out Eric Rowan and Luke Harper, and even though Bray Wyatt technically won that match via child or something, and walked out the door, he still felt like a loser because John Cena beat up the whole Wyatt family, you know? And so even though Bray Wyatt technically won, it was just really, really, really frustrating because it was like, but Cena still just looks like superhuman and got beaten because he's dumb.
And that's the thing that Rock does kind of throughout his career is that he's confident of his own ability that he doesn't need to always be the guy that wins very strongly every single time.
It's really fascinating because I've always heard the comparisons between Rock and Austin, right? Like Rock and Austin being on top at the same time. And so it's been an era of Retro Raw that I've been intrigued to get to. And I think now that we're in it, like we're kind of in the, early-ish stages, but we're definitely in that period of time where Rock and Austin are both on top, and you can see the differences between them, right? Like, Austin has to win. Like, Austin doesn't lose. Austin doesn't put people over. Austin comes out and stunners everyone. Austin always has to go over super, super strong, and you can see that Rock, as a performer, has to be a lot more confident because he does lose a lot more often, and he does give people a lot more, and he still manages to become, you know, the Rock. He's one of the biggest stars in WWF history. I mean, he's arguably like mainstream. He's the biggest star, right? So it's interesting watching the two of them in parallel. I think just in terms of how different they are as characters, but also just in terms of their approaches backstage and that kind of thing. It's fascinating.
So from there, we have Undertaker running down afterwards for a brief brawl. Rock gets a tombstone. Vince and Shane are conferring with Triple H, who says he's going to kick the Undertaker's ass as Vince is trying to, you know, defuse the situation. We see Austin taping up his knee brace. And then we have Mark Henry versus Viscera in what was supposed to be a gorilla press match. Mark Henry's gear, want to talk about it?
What even was he wearing here? Like, I just, and what was this new music? I was baffled. I was baffled when Mark Henry came out. There's a new rap song that I don't appreciate because I was, you know, quite fond of Sexual Chocolate Mark Henry. I thought he was a great character, even though it started off a little shaky with the whole China stalker situation. But, you know, like, he'd kind of come into his own as a jovial dude, and I liked him a lot. And now he's just like, what was he wearing? What even is happening here? Where's D'Lo Brown? Why is Mark Henry just like a dude?
I mean, I don't really know why there's so many changes to Mark Henry, and I feel like they've all been for the worse, but they're there. So this match, though, is so rubbish. Like, it's so bad.
Oh, it's terrible. And they changed it to a body slam match. No, I thought it was a body slam match from the beginning.
No, didn't they announce it as the gorilla press match? Or is it just
announced it as a body slam match. I think you're thinking of Heat.
They did say, it was a gorilla press match.
Yeah, on Heat they did, apparently. But I don't remember ever hearing that it was a gorilla press match. I remember hearing that it was a body slam match. Like, okay. As they were announcing it, as they were walking to the ring. Because, when you said gorilla press match from Heat, I was like, what? Like, where did that come from? But they announced it as a body slam match. And they're just like, no way one of them can body slam the other. Because, Mark Henry is the strongest man in the world. But it's 500 pounds of viscera. How could he possibly do that? And, I mean, this is essentially the same type of thing when we saw Vader versus Psycho Sid in a powerbomb match, right? Like, how could one of them powerbomb the other one? That's just crazy to think about. This was bad. This was very bad.
It was very bad.
And Viscera ends up winning when Mark Henry's on the top rope and Viscera, like, quote unquote, body slams him in the heaviest of inverted commas. But it didn't really come across like a body slam. It came across like he threw Mark Henry onto his head and it looked rough. And I was scared for Mark Henry because that just didn't look good. And this should never have happened. Whose idea was this?
No idea. It was. So the Gorilla Press body slam match ends with Viscera getting the win. Then we have Beaver Cleaver.
And I just felt bad for Mark Henry because I like Mark Henry so much. I'm like, why are you just having Mark Henry get thrown about by Viscera and then lose? I mean, I guess you're trying to make the corporate ministry look strong, but like, it's Viscera.
But everything that made Mark Henry get over was like this sort of sexualization of Sexual Chocolate and all that kind of stuff that people kind of got on board with, and now you've taken all that away.
And you know, just kind of expose the fact that he's not a very good wrestler. But like, when he was with D'Lo Brown, I think they worked as a tag team because, you know, D'Lo could wrestle really well and then Mark Henry could get in and be a big force, right? And when Mark Henry's in singles matches, especially against someone like Viscera, it's just not going to go very well.
No, it is not. Beaver Cleavage is doing a promo backstage with his mum. He puts his head in his mum's chest and then he says he can't do this and walks off. And, right, I know it's 1999, but I've done pre-tapes in wrestling before for much smaller companies. If I had done this, I would immediately cut the thing. So, right. The person who shouts Chaz shouts it far too loudly and far too unconvincingly. And
oh, yeah.
It's awful. Like, hey, Chaz, we're live. Hey, Chaz. What?
Chaz, we're live, Chaz.
And Michael Cole is trying to be like, "What's going on?" in a really like amateur dramatic kind of way. It was really badly executed, but he's no longer
It felt
Beaver
like a
Cletus.
high school play, like rendition of a backstage promo, or like a middle school play rendition
Were
of a
you gutted?
backstage
Were
promo.
you gutted? We're not getting Beaver Cleavage versus Meat.
I mean, I was looking forward to the epic clash of Beaver Cleavage versus Meat, frankly. And I thought that Beaver Cleavage had a chance to triumph because his mother was there with him and, you know, maybe he would win for her or so. I mean, I know some of where this leads, and I wish I didn't know some of where this leads.
What do you mean?
I know some of what Chaz goes on to do.
Oh, you mean when he's a team?
Yes.
Okay, well, for a while he's just Chaz with his girlfriend, Mariana.
Right. Yeah. So I would rather just have Beaver Cleavage. Beaver Cleavage makes me laugh. Like, it's so tacky and ridiculous. But and I just this is one of those like breaking the fourth wall things that bugs me too, right? Like where you're really just lampshading it and being like, oh yeah, like everything you're watching isn't real because Beaver Cleavage isn't really Beaver Cleavage and his name is Chaz and he as an actor has just walked off the set. And they're trying to be edgy and they're trying to be a shoot bro. And it just, I don't know. It always rubs me the wrong way. I don't really like this kind of thing. And it's
As
not for me.
someone who does like that kind of thing sometimes, I just don't think this one was executed well in any way, shape, or form. And that's
No.
part of the problem. Like some of them, you know, like the whole CM Punk pipe bomb stuff in 2011 worked really well because they just managed to find this weird little microcosm of the show where it
When I think
worked.
that was an effective blending of reality, but this is more like this feels like someone walks out on this, like if you're watching a stage show, this is like someone walks out on the stage, breaks the fourth wall, and goes, okay, that actor needs to like run to the toilet or whatever and is no longer this character. And I just, it's, I don't know. I'm just not really a huge fan of it. And why did you make him Beaver Cleavage if
Well,
you're
apparently,
just
like
gonna not have him be Beaver Cleavage
I think the
anymore?
reaction to Beaver Cleavage was like it's just crap, and I mean
Well, it is crap.
it was so crap that they ditched it after. I mean, the match with Christian was horrendous.
It was very bad, which is weird because they're both good wrestlers.
Yeah, it's a weird like. Anyway, JR
Like, I
Cole
don't
just.
think the wrestling was terrible. Like, it was not the greatest, but.
JR tells us anything can happen on live TV. Up
And they're
next.
like, hey, I guess we're not getting that Beaver Cleavage versus Meat match. I did think, like, when they announced Beaver Cleavage versus Meat, I was like, oh, Meat is going to be on Raw? Because I know before when Meat was on Raw, it was a big thing, right? Because everyone has, you know, talks about Meat on Heat. And so I was like, oh, we're going to get to see Meat on Raw. And then we didn't.
Up next, we get Commissioner Shawn Michaels coming out in his referee gear.
Another entrance for Shawn Michaels. Have you noticed that every single time he has, like, multiple entrances per show?
He does. I do get it. Again, they're in a ratings thing. Shawn Michaels is a big name, and people. I mean, if I was at a show, I like an entrance. So him being the referee doesn't really bother me. It is what it is. So we get Big Boss Man versus Steve Austin. Big Boss Man. Like, so it hits off the ropes and sort of kapows back in the best way I've ever seen in my life. He's so
I
good.
just love him. I love the Big Boss Man. I think he's fantastic.
This match was so much fun. Austin Boss Man was so good. They have this brawl. We got Vince and Shane at commentary. Vince decides to stand up on a ladder just to show that he can get up a ladder. And then
Just
Boss Man's
to
outside.
demonstrate.
Boss Man's got the upper hand, and it's all going well. And then Austin gets the upper hand, and then Austin goes and shoves the ladder back, and Vince takes this bump. The crowd go insane. It was a great bump from Vince, to be fair.
It was a great bump from Vince.
And then Vince is like on commentary a minute later, going, "What the hell is this?" Like he's raging. And then Shawn Michaels is really funnily like at one point as Austin and Boss Man are brawling the outside, you see Shawn Michaels just sitting on the ring steps. Like he's sitting on a tree when he's 15, drinking beer. And then this leads to back in the ring, Luthes Press, elbow drop, stunner, gets pushed off, big boot, but then Bossman has the nightstick, tries to use it, stunner, 1, 2, 3, and Steve Austin gets the stipulation, no corporate ministry involvement at King of the Ring, and Shawn Michaels raises his hand, and Austin and Michaels have beers. So all's happy with the world. What do you think of this match and the brawl and the bump and all the stuff?
The match was fun. It was really fun. Like I hoped that I would like the Big Boss Man when I was getting into to Retro Raw and whatnot, and I'd kind of heard like, you know, okay, like who wants to see the Boss Man wrestle in 1999? Like he was a much bigger star years and years ago, and he was past his prime, and blah blah blah. Big Boss Man is fantastic. Like he's as a lackey, he's super ineffective because he never wins. Like even though he has a nightstick, he just never wins because a lot of times he'll use the nightstick and cause a disqualification, or you know, like he doesn't tend to get the job done. But as a character on the show, he's so fucking entertaining. Like I really enjoy him, and Steve Austin's great. Like I was invested in Steve Austin winning this, even though I wasn't crazy about the prize being adding another stipulation to a ladder match, which just seems like too much, like I said. Still, I was behind Steve Austin in the match, and I wanted the dastardly corporate ministry to fall to Steve Austin. And Shawn Michaels being the guest referee didn't bother me too much, which was nice, because that's a compliment I'll give to Shawn Michaels, even though it bugs me that he puts himself in so many matches and, you know, he tries to make himself the center of attention all the time. When he does special guest referee, I think he's very, very good at it. Like he's actually one of the best special guest referees because he doesn't tend to call too much attention to himself until the time is right. And even like, even in this match, even though Shawn Michaels was obviously on side with Steve Austin and not on side with the corporate ministry, it didn't seem like he was doing the Shane McMahon thing of just like completely screwing the corporate ministry over or like completely going like fast counting for Austin or anything like that. Right. Cause that bugs me. I don't like that when, you know, Shane or China is the referee and it just, it takes the drama out of the match for me. Cause I'm like, if the referee isn't on side, then what's even the point? You know, who's going to win. And even though that's supposed to add drama for me, it just doesn't. I think Shawn Michaels did a really good job here. And then, so in the end, when he did count the pin for Steve Austin, it made sense and it seemed legit. Like, I mean, he didn't call some of the interference and he didn't do countouts and that kind of stuff. But I mean, the bump from Vince at ringside was pretty funny. Him getting on commentary and just being raging was kind of funny.
I think one of the things they could learn from this time frame is that every week stuff happens. That like, yes. If you miss a week, you miss things. Like, you don't, like, if you, sometimes now on the main roster, like, if I'm going to watch Becky Lynch versus Lacey Evans, for example, if I miss 2 weeks of Raw and it's on the pay-per-view, the chances are I've not really missed anything that's changed. It's just mm-hmm. still happening. Whereas on these shows, while, you know, it is overbooked sometimes, there's always stuff that happens that you kind of need to have seen or heard about to make the story work. And that's just kind of, it's what NXT does now.
That's what NXT does now.
You watch NXT, and like, if you miss a week, you might miss why a certain match is happening or why a certain stipulation has been added. And they don't do it in the main roster now. And I don't think it's a mystery that there's a correlation between declining viewers and the shows not being must-see anymore.
Well, right, because a lot of the main roster shows don't matter and they don't really feel like anything happens. I mean, or they tease that something is going to happen and then it doesn't, right? And I think that's something that Retro Raw does too. They say like, oh, we're gonna have this main event between two people, like Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon in the main event. You're not gonna get a proper like Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon main event, but something else will happen that equals it.
Yeah, the idea and is then, if you're not gonna deliver something, you need to deliver something of equal value.
And yeah, like, is Brock Lesnar going to be there is not enough of a hook for me to be like, you know, like, A, no, he's not going to be there because he was on the two previous. And if you're teasing that maybe he's going to be there, that means he's not, because he's not going to do all of those dates, right?
And even that Austin McMahon thing that you referenced in the April 13th, 1998 episode of Raw, you get in the archives. At the time, I was like, dude, love? What? But actually, that started a really interesting character shift for Mick Foley and led to, you know, one of my favorite matches that year, Over the Edge with Austin and Dude Love, but it led to a lot of stuff. So it wasn't like a swerve for swerve's sakes and not giving you something. It was giving you something else, which led somewhere else. And also, they'd have been stupid to give Austin McMahon away at that point. They needed to build it, so it belonged to a pay per view. We then got Val Venus, who was supposed to wrestle, draws her Prince Albert in retaliation for them trying to pierce his nose. Val attacks them, cuffs draws to the post. Albert gets hit with the money shot. Now
he cuffs Albert to the post, didn't he? Or no?
No.
He cuffs draws, and then he cuffs Albert later.
Yeah, he cuffs draws, then he gives Albert the money shot, then Albert's cuffed and stomped. Val has a briefcase, he's trying to open it. It's tattooing equipment. He pulls down Albert's pants, he's wearing a thong, and he's tattooing his initials on Albert's ass. So VV on Albert's ass.
First of all, it looked like a W. Second of all, I think it's important to note that Prince Albert is wearing like shiny, like pleather daddy gear here and then getting stomped down by Val Venus and handcuffed. And the whole thing was very kinky.
I'm fascinated by the idea of what in the late 90s constituted heterosexual masculinity. Because I've seen
Like, is
most of
that
this
supposed
in
to be
a
this?
homosexual club. Like,
Oh, yeah.
these are not
Like,
straight things at all. Like, some people, oh, you know, people get free to express themselves how they want. Not at this point in life. At this point, it was a very clear, like, men are masculine and have the heterosexual thing at this point in pop culture. But these guys are so gay.
I have seen films that begin in this sort of vein that are definitely gay porn. So, the wrestling's so gay sometimes, which is why I love it. Like, it's the best thing about wrestling for me. I love it. But the fact that these are supposed to be big, manly men and like having all of this like super masculine energy and all this stuff, like they do, and that's totally fine. But it makes me laugh that this is a crowd full of homophobes and this is a company full of homophobes, and gay slurs are like standard insults in this time frame, and yet you have Albert dressed like that, being handcuffed and mounted by Val Venus as he pulls his pants down and tattoos his ass.
Oh, the 90s.
I'm just saying, but I mean, like, watch this segment. It's kinky.
Then we have
And
we
also,
get.
I'm intrigued by the fact that Albert, like, he doesn't shave his back, but there's like the clear line where he starts shaving his ass.
So
It's a
many
very weird choice
questions.
to me.
So many questions. We do get clips though of the ministry beat up the big boss man. The boss man is out of the corporate ministry, ladies and gentlemen. He has
Poor big
been.
boss man.
He didn't get the job done. He was ineffective. So, time's up for Big Boss Man.
I mean, the fact that it took them this long to realize that the big boss man is ineffective really says something about the corporate ministry, right? Like, I mean, Christian messes up once and they try to hang him and whip him and beat him up for weeks. The big boss man has never really gotten the job done, and it took them this long. Apparently, boss man had some sort of, I don't know, indemnity clause or something. But yeah, like, I just feel bad for the big boss man. I like the big boss man. I feel that this will lead to some poor behavior on his part. Is this when he starts lashing out?
I'm not saying a thing.
I'm so excited for what's to come.
Up next, we have a six-man tag with X-Pac, Kane, and Road Dogg against the Acolytes and Mr. Ass. X-Pac wants the tag team titles on the line, and Mr. Ass agrees on behalf of the Acolytes, which they are not happy about.
I mean,
You
I
know.
agree. I will put their tag team championships on the line, which are not mine. But
Ro
Billy Gunn, I mean, it's in his best interest, right? Because if he wins, then does he become one of the champions?
I mean, this is the same company where Road Dogg subbed in for Kane on Heat, and then Road Dogg got pinned. It was supposed to be a tag title match, but the Acolytes didn't win the titles. So, rules, no idea. Road Dogg
I'm just
does.
saying, this is why I say I need to know the rules beforehand. I need to know the established rules.
Road Dogg mocks the Acolytes for talking through their ass. Then they all start brawling. Mr. Ass has the belt, misses, trying to hit X-Pac with it. And then Mr. Ass hits the Famouser on the tag belt to X-Pac, I think it is, and gets the win. And then Billy Gunn leaves with the belt. So he seems to think because he got the victory here in this six-man tag that he is now one of the tag team champions.
I mean, does that mean that all three of them would be?
I
Or
mean,
is he just being
I'd
pretentious?
love to see a night out with Mr. Ass and the Acolytes.
Oh,
Like, Billy
gosh.
Gunn would want to go to a gay club. The Acolytes would want to go to like the Cat House in Glasgow, the goth club. And I mean, how would they compromise? Where would that compromise be? I don't even know what that would look like.
I'm trying to think if there would be any compromise. I mean, I guess you could go to like a gay goth club, but I feel like the Acolytes wouldn't be all about it.
Bradshaw probably would.
Maybe.
Big Show's getting ready in the back. Al Snow. Is then looking around, picks his nose and eats it, talks to Head that he's not doing that and tries to downplay it. What?
GTV, man. Like, if you're gonna show us stuff that's happening backstage, make it a little more interesting.
Couldn't GTV have shown us the ministry beating up the boss man?
Right? But no, it's I think these segments are supposed to just be hilarious because Al Snow picked his nose, Kenny. It's so funny.
Up next, we've got Big Show versus Hardcore Holly. Hardcore Holly's doing a promo beforehand, basically calling the Big Show a fat pig, essentially. Challenge him to a hardcore match. Why such a bad idea? Well, he's the Big Show.
Hardcore Holly is not very intelligent.
Also, I do love on this show, I totally forgot to say, I love that Vince is trying to get over the phrase, that's not going to happen tonight. That's not going to happen any night. He's determined to get that over.
And it does not work.
It does not work. Hardcore Holly is basically murdered. And he tries to toss a trash can at Big Show, but Big Show ducks and then hits him. Show runs him into a concrete thing. He then throws somebody, pushes a car that was conveniently placed at the edge off onto Bob Holly and then pins him. He basically murders Hardcore Holly in cold blood and wins the match. I mean, any thoughts here?
I mean, I don't understand how Big Show can manage to look bored while pushing over a car. Like, at least when Braun Strowman flips cars and stuff, he looks like he's enjoying it. And he looks like a monster man, and he's like, rawr, I'm Braun Strowman. Like, even though he's super ineffective compared to what he was, like, a year and a half ago, at least he's still, like, when he flips stuff, he puts some energy into it. Big Show's just like, meh, pushing over a car onto Bob Holly, just gonna murder a guy. Like, what even, Big Show? Like, he's so bad. And so, I mean, I guess, like, yeah, Big Show wins, but I just don't really understand the point of any of this, because I don't know why Hardcore Holly is challenging the Big Show to a hardcore match. So doesn't the seem whole, like a smart idea.
The whole idea now with Hardcore Holly going forward is going to be that he sees himself as a super heavyweight. He, in his mind, he's so delusional that he thinks he could batter the Big Show.
And I always thought that was Crash's deal.
Well, that's how Crash kind of gets introduced. But they together think that they are amazing, and that they can do anything.
I mean, he is incorrect.
What gave that away? When the car was shoved on top of him?
Yes. And it's funny how commentary's trying to, like, to play down the car, but also try to, like, sell the importance of the car. Because they're like, I don't know how much contact the car made with Bob Holly, but Big Show pushed over a car. Look how big and strong he is. But also, we don't want to let on that a man has been murdered on live television. And then they do show Bob Holly afterwards, and he's just laying there like, ow, I'm hurt. Like, it does not look like a car has been pushed on top of him when they show Bob Holly afterwards. It just looks like he has, you know, been beaten up by the Big Show and pinned. And then for a minute, I was like, is Bob Holly still the champion? Is Big Show the champion? Oh no, El Snow's still the champion. But all we saw of El Snow was him picking his nose backstage. So they're not really doing very well at establishing that the hardcore championship means anything or is on a certain person.
Bob Holly, man. I mean, in saying that though, you know, Hardcore Holly is an example of, like, if you can get Bob Holly over, like, you're doing something right. Because look how, I mean, he was Thurman Sparky Plug Sondra.
I mean, I love Thurman Sparky Plug. He had vroom vroom noises.
We see, up next we get Patterson and Briscoe against the McMahons. Patterson and Briscoe attempt to kind of charge the ring, but they're not very fast. They tackle Vince and Shane. They're going back and forth, and then Shamrock comes down, and in order to save Vince, Shane clips Shamrock from behind. Shane gets caught and gets brutally demolished by Ken Shamrock. Patterson and Briscoe are then left to, you know, take over. But then the Mean Street Posse come in with a new member who helps them kind of clean house, and then they use a chair to break Gerald Briscoe's leg. This is the introduction of Joey Abs to the Mean Street Posse. So Briscoe,
he's the one who's actually a wrestler, right?
Yes. So Briscoe's leg has been broken. The McMahons have got out of dodge, but Shane has ultimately taken the fall for his dad. What did you make of this angle?
I mean, I don't actually know who won the match, because it just kind of devolved into a brawl and everyone was fighting everyone. But I love Angry Ken Shamrock coming out. I love Angry Ken Shamrock at any point, because of course he's still angry at Vince and Shane, as well he should be. And, you know, Angry Ken Shamrock with the chair is great. I'm also happy that the Mean Street Posse is now at full strength, because I, again, am a big Mean Street Posse fan. I was happy to see Joey Abs. I love Mean Street Posse and Stooges shenanigans, so that's a lot of fun. I love the fact that Pat Patterson is wearing his first IC Champ shirt. I love the fact that Gerald Briscoe is wearing his Briscoe Body Shop shirt. I love the fact that they come out to Real American. I think this was a lot of fun. And I just want to see Vince and Shane get battered. So that's the only problem with the Mean Street Posse is that they're on the wrong side.
You can now get a figure from Mattel, which is the Pat Patterson in his first IC Champ t-shirt.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I want that so badly.
It is main event time. Shawn Michaels has made it Triple H versus The Undertaker for the title. They're going back and forth. China, of course, gets involved. The ref's yelling at her. The fight kind of continues on the floor. China has a chair, but it's blocked. She runs off. Triple H tries to fend off The Undertaker, but here comes The Rock. Rock bottom on The Undertaker. Paul Bearer runs in, gets killed. And then, I mean, you cannot make this up. A Brahma bull symbol with snorting steam lowers from the ceiling. People's elbow on The Undertaker. Triple H is left. Acolytes run down, and everybody else, they all attack The Rock. He fights back. Boss Man runs down to help The Rock as revenge. Paul Bearer gets handcuffed to the Brahma bull signal. Undertaker stares him, and Rock gets the mic and says the pay-per-view will be the night of the Brahma bull. This was mental. I don't even know what you say about it. What did you make of The Rock buying his own symbol and sacrificing Paul Bearer on it?
I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great. The main event, I'm not going to lie, like, until The Rock came out, I couldn't tell you anything that happened in this main event, because I think when Triple H and The Undertaker are wrestling on my screen, I just see white noise. It's almost like a Dolph Ziggler match where I'm like, I know things are happening. I couldn't tell you what. But when The Rock came out and started getting involved and started inserting himself into the proceedings, then it kind of picked up. So that's a positive thing that I'm saying about The Rock. Yeah, the Brahma bull symbol just made me laugh because it's this big cartoon bullhead, and like the bull has pyro, like it's snorting sparks and smoke and stuff. And JR's like, the Brahma bull is snorting. Could this be a sign of things to come on Sunday? And I'm like, what would that be a sign of, though? Like, cattle? Are cattle going to invade? Is The Rock going to have a stuffy nose? Like, I don't know. The whole thing was just so comedic. I didn't really know what was going on because it didn't really occur to me until you just called it a symbol, like a Brahma bull symbol, that I was like, oh, it's supposed to mirror the Undertaker symbol that he always has that's supposed to be creepy, and now The Rock has one. I was just like, cartoon bullhead. Sure, why not? But I enjoyed it, and sacrificing Paul Bearer on a snorting Brahma bull was funny to me. I don't really know what to make of it. I don't know that it really makes me want to see Rock versus Undertaker anymore. I don't know that anything could really make me want to see Rock versus Undertaker anymore, but I don't know. I enjoyed the shenanigans to end the show. It did make me laugh. And once The Rock came out and electrified everyone with his snorting Brahma bull, I was a little bit more into it.
It was mental. I mean, I think they were clever in the sense of, like, when you've got Undertaker and Triple H in there, like, the fans dislike both of them. So you run the risk of, like, fans having to choose one. But I think they did a good enough job by having China and Paul Bearer kind of get involved to keep it the way it needed to be. And then they brought The Rock out kind of at the right time. And, you know, him getting one up on The Undertaker was good. And then the Brahma bull symbol was just the best thing ever. So bad.
It was great. It was just such a great visual. Like, and by great, I mean, what even the fuck? But fantastic. I love, see, and I don't hate shenanigans, I promise. Like, I enjoy shenanigans quite a bit, and this was funny to me.
Yeah, it was very, very funny. Overall, where would your thumb be for this episode of Raw to go home for Kingdom 1999?
This one's actually a thumbs up. I enjoyed it a lot more than I've enjoyed the past couple episodes. Like, I've been kind of getting nervous because I've been pretty down on Raw since Over the Edge, because I think that it just kind of, like, I don't know, it just kind of took a nosedive, which isn't fun. And, like, Vince being the greater power is not great. And I haven't been as into the stories and angles, but I think this one had enough shenanigans, and even the stuff that bugged me, like some of the stipulation stuff. And I still am not a big fan of the greater power. Like, he's like, it's just business. It's not personal. It's just business. It's like, no, the greater power thing was entirely personal. Like, it was 100% personal. It's just, it's personal between you and Stone Cold Steve Austin, and you don't give a shit about your daughter. So I'm trying to set that kind of stuff aside and just kind of go with what we have. But yeah, even like the really shit stuff on the show, like Mark Henry versus Viscera didn't bug me terribly, even though I worry for Mark Henry's safety being thrown by Viscera. Yeah, like it was enjoyable, and it went by actually fairly quickly, which was positive. What did you think?
Yeah, I think this is the first show they've done since the Go Home Over the Edge show that I think is a thumbs up, like a really good thumbs up show. Like, I think that the Greater Power thing kind of hurts it quite a bit, but I think they've kind of got over it now. And now that we've kind of, we've just got used to it now that that is what it is. But I thought there was enough stuff on the show that I really enjoyed. Like, Rock and Edge was a really fun match to see. The opening segment I thought was fun. Shamrock Test and Jeff Jarrett was actually pretty fun. Awesome.
Boss Man and Austin's
Bossman
great.
Austin is so good. And yeah, I thought, like you said, I think it went by pretty quickly. And even the stuff like Big Show and Hardcore Holly, which was not, it is what it is. It was quick enough that it was. I mean, he threw a car on top of him. Like, what do you say to that?
You say through. I
Well,
say
you
lazily pushed.
lazily pushed slash through. So yeah,
I
thumbs
mean,
up.
if only we could have had that epic encounter between Beaver Cleavage and Meat, it could have been just the best show we've ever seen.
10 out of 10. So that is it. That's it for this show. I do want to say a couple of notes from what was going on this week. Obviously, WWF were very annoyed about Rena Mero being on last week's Nitro. On the 16th of June, Jerry McDevitt spoke to WCW lawyers, threatened to file a federal lawsuit. WCW responded by saying that Mrs. Mero is not under contract to WCW, there's no contract negotiations, etc. The lawsuit that Rena Mero has against the WWF is for $140 million. But Jerry McDevitt is quoted as saying, "She can sue us till the cows come home. She's still not going to get the name Sable. She can make all the allegations she wants, and it won't get her anywhere." So they are pretty staunchly saying that she's not going to get it. He did also say it's a silly lawsuit. Sable was on last week's TV Guide. Then she had an interview with Jay Leno. So she's been kind of around. She said to the USA Today, "I think people do not realize that wrestling has no regulations, no state control, no federal control, no union. When I first signed 3 years ago, it was fun, but wrestling has changed tremendously over the years. It's become so obscene and violent." But I guess the thing that hurts her is that she was part of a lot of the kind of overtly sexual stuff and seems pretty okay with doing it. So it's probably part of what hurts her claim.
See, it's interesting because, like, I feel like she could have had a claim if she was like, I was not okay with doing this. They forced me into doing this. I mean, I don't really know what's all true backstage, but it does seem kind of like, but some of that seemed to be like what you wanted to do too. I don't know. Like,
I mean, because
she
she
doesn't.
was, I think in 1999 or 98 to 1999, she cleared like over $1 million. And no other woman was doing that at all. So she was very well compensated. And, I've never heard a story. She's never said publicly that she was forced against her will to do that. I mean, the one thing that she says is that they asked her to do the accident and she said no. But there's so many stories that she was getting really difficult to work with, and you've even said before that she, as 99 came in, she just seemed so uninterested to be there.
Yeah,
That
she just looked bored.
she's just like bored of the whole thing. So there was that. Let's see if there's any other news I can tell you about from this week. Hold on. Great radio when I'm scrolling through here. I should have probably done this before I came on. For fuck's sake.
So is Sable's out of her contract now?
Well, they're in a lawsuit.
Or
I
is
think
she not?
the lawsuit is essentially her trying to get out of her contract and
Because
get
it's
some
interesting
work.
that she's making appearances and stuff and like going on talk shows and whatnot. Like, what did she go on Jay Leno, you said?
Yeah.
And so she did that as Rina Mero.
Yes. I've
Okay,
been trying to find clips of it.
so she's been able to like do these appearances out with her contract. That's just really fascinating if you think about like today's culture in wrestling,
Well, like
because there's
McDev.
no way that that would ever be allowed.
Yeah, well, Jerry. One of the things Jerry McDevitt said is, it's one thing for her to go to a wrestling show and sit in the stands, but she very clearly would have known that being front row and being on television is a direct violation of her contract. So she's like, I mean, she's trying here. She really is trying to get out. WWF had bought at this point, I think we've talked this before, I know Bruce Pritchard's talked about it, Debbie Reynolds used to own a hotel in Vegas, and WWF bought it. They were going to turn it into like a WWF hotel, but they're now trying to unload the hotel. This would end up being they unload this, and then they get WWF New York.
Great investment there.
Brian Christopher's going undergoing major knee surgery with Dr. James Andrews, and he's going to be out to the end of the year. Yeah, so at this point, Mick Foley has started working on his autobiography while he's recovering from knee surgery. Have a Nice Day, which is going to be a great book. If nobody's ever read it, go pick it up.
It is great. I love it.
And WWF tried to get Austin on Jay Leno to respond to Goldberg, because Goldberg basically put a challenge out to him. The Leno people said it would be great if he accepted, but when Titan told him he wasn't going to accept, they didn't want him on the show, because I think they wanted... Yeah, so they wanted to try and get Austin on with Goldberg. But they just couldn't get it done. The 26th of June, Madison Square Garden was supposed to be The Undertaker versus The Big Show. Thankfully, they saw sense and changed it to Undertaker versus Austin.
I mean, Undertaker versus The Big Show. Get excited. Especially this version of The Big Show.
So the Jackal, Don Callis, at this point was writing for the Winnipeg Sun. And he had a quote this week that said, this is 1998, bear in mind. He says, "I bet Bill Clinton is glad he never met Sable."
Wow.
So.
Wow.
The 90s, ladies and gentlemen.
The 90s.
To play us out, who should we play? We're not playing Ken Shamrock again.
We're not playing Ken Shamrock again.
Since he's gone now, and we can't do it again, should we just play Beaver Cleavage one last time?
I think we should play Beaver Cleavage one last time. Okay. Or I was going to say The Boss Man, but let's play Beaver Cleavage.
What are the plugs, Sandra?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. We'll be covering King of the Ring 99 very soon. We'll also be covering Stomping Ground later this weekend. Get excited for that. Ugh, stomping my head into the ground. And check out youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for lots of wrestler interview content. InsidetheRopes.co.uk for tickets to see Awesome Kong, along with any other shows that might be upcoming. And I think that is all the plugs, Kenny.
That is all the plugs. So here to play us out is the Beaver Cleavage theme tune. He lasted 2 weeks. 3 weeks, I guess, if you include his breakdown on camera. So, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you have a good weekend. We'll be back next Thursday on Patreon with King of the Ring. Bye!
Bye.